I'm happy now to welcome back to the show Alina Scheim. She is Executive Director of Impact Personal Safety right here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
So just as I said before, we're checking in with some organizations that are doing wonderful work here in Santa Fe, and just to find out what they're up to these days. What is Impact Personal Safety all about?
Impact Personal Safety is a nonprofit that empowers children and adults by teaching them to prevent and defend themselves against verbal, physical, and sexual violence.
And so you do that by teaching them not only to fight, and there's some kind of martial arts component to it, which when I did it was scary but quite useful, or maybe will be useful someday, but also just that kind of learning the personal quality of standing your ground and not letting anybody mess with you.
Yes, we do both of those aspects of awareness, verbal, and physical skills for that moment and to avoid that moment. We also do social change aspects in our classes that we do, primarily in the schools, examining the roots of violence so that we can really acknowledge where violence comes from so that we don't even get to that moment. So we kind of have two different paths that we get to. We have the personal, and then we have the community change.
Tell us more about the community aspect. What is it that you're teaching in the schools?
One of our classes is called The Roots of Violence, and in that class we look at the relationship between the violence that we see in the community and what we call the roots of violence, which include racism, sexism, homophobia, xenophobia, classism, etc., and really look at the spectrum of violence from these low-level jokes and comments to where it turns into an assault and maybe even death, and at its most extreme, genocide.
Right.
And so in our classes, what's really great is we have the opportunity to help students see across those topics so that they're not just thinking, well, I have it the worst and I have it the worst and we shouldn't help each other. You know, it's an opportunity for them to go, oh, it's a part of an entire system that if I'm doing this, it's because it's relating to these other things. So what's great about it, I'm sure you remember Matthew Shepard from several years ago, who was a gay man who was beaten to death in Wyoming. One of the interviews that they did with his assailants that they then turned into a play, they asked the assailant, well, why did you do this? Do you regret it? And he said, well, I was just doing what everyone else wanted to do. Everyone else was calling him a fruitcake and a fag. And, you know, I just did what they wanted to do. And obviously, most people wouldn't take it to the extreme, but there are people in our communities, for whatever reasons, mental issues or a history of abuse, etc., that will take it to that extreme. And so we use that story and others like it oftentimes in this class to help people realize, you know, it may sound like just a joke to you, but it creates an atmosphere in which violence in its extreme is okay to someone.
And I think we're not used to seeing the connection between a racial slur and what some people might even consider a joke, and a murder, and then between a murder and genocide. But if you think of those things all as a part of a continuum, it changes your picture.
Right, and what's really important about that is that, you know, some of the examples that I give in class is, you know, if a student, if a woman was raped, and you had never heard the term slut, you had never heard the term bitch, what would our community do? If one of their daughters, one of their sisters was raped, it wouldn't be everyday business. People would be pounding on the doors of the police station saying, we demand justice. The same thing is true, you know, if you look at a janitor who works at the schools. If somebody talked to that person, if they got to know them, you know, if they crossed that divide that we frequently have in social classes to find out, oh, and this person doesn't have insurance, which means that he hasn't found out that he has a heart problem, which means that when he has a heart attack, not only can he not may it make him go bankrupt, but it also is going to make it so that he doesn't even find out about it preventatively. You know, these are the kinds of things that people in our communities are having to deal with, that because of these divides, we don't actually realize that they need to be addressed.
Have you ever had the situation when you were in a class teaching this work and people from two supposedly different groups had the light bulb go off where they realized that they weren't or shouldn't be separated as they are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. And that's really exciting, especially with teenagers. You know, teenagers get very, you know, into very discrete factions and groups around these issues. And what's really exciting for me is when an immigrant student or a student from an immigrant family gets to realize what they're going through is exactly the same thing that a teenage girl's going through.
Right.
And seeing that connection and going, oh, it's not about, you know, it's that piece of the pie thing. Winona LaDuke has a great quote of about not wanting a bigger piece of the pie, she wants a different pie altogether.
That's nice. And
it's exactly that. It's helping students realize that, you know, when they're playing out these little acts of violence through bullying or through exclusion, things like that, that they're getting pegged as these problem kids. I love working with kids that are having a hard time myself. And they're getting pegged as these problem kids, and that's what they're starting to absorb, instead of realizing that they're actually a part of this bigger system that they're only playing out a role in. And if they can find the vocabulary to figure out that they're playing out a role and continuing the cycle of violence, you should see these kids when they find out that they're doing the same thing to someone else that someone did to them in another way. You know, they want to change it so badly. I had a student who, in the Alternatives to Violence Prevention program with Bernalillo County in Albuquerque, say to me in this boys group that I was working with, well, is it just damaged goods? And it took me a minute to figure out what he meant.
What did he mean?
He was asking me whether the world was fixable or not, whether it was just messed up and there was nothing that could be done. And what's great about this class is that we don't just look at the problems. We do look at, okay, so what can you do to change these things? What can you do in a passive way? Because there's ways that these problems are perpetuated in a passive way, not saying something when you hear a joke, etc., to what are ways that they're perpetuated in active ways. Assaulting someone, clear discrimination, etc. And then we look at passive and active ways of changing this environment. And what we come to is there's no passive way of changing things.
Right.
You have to act in order to change it. So that's very exciting for them to not only be able to put a label to what they're already experiencing and seeing in the world, and finally someone's talking about it, which is just such a relief for the students, especially that have been experiencing some of these things, but also to realize, oh, there's ways of changing it. I don't just have to try to get up on someone else to feel powerful. I can feel powerful by helping the entire community, which is definitely what we want to see.
One of the things I learned from talking to and from preparing for the conversation that we had a while back with Maria Hinojosa, the wonderful Latina journalist, was that discrimination against immigrants here in this country has been going on since before it was even a country. Mm-hmm. There was this quote from Benjamin Franklin where he was talking about how the Germans are stupid and incapable of enjoying freedom because they've never had it. And every generation you can find a quotation from somebody who's been immigrant bashing. Mm-hmm. And then the next generation, that same immigrant group and their children and grandchildren, bashes the next generation mm-hmm. of immigrants in mm-hmm. one way or another, unless they don't, but many of them do. And this is the history of our nation for well over 200 years.
Well, and it's the cycle of violence. It's what we know is that when somebody has experienced violence, unless there is some kind of intervention, the likelihood of them going on to perpetuate violence against another person is incredibly high. You know, I remember I grew up Jewish, and I remember growing up and finding out that there was some sort of conflict, I believe, with Jesse Jackson when I was young, and some comment about Jews. And I remember being utterly shocked that two oppressed groups would have any problems with each other.
Right.
Instead of, you know, banding together to realize that they were experiencing similar things. But that is exactly what happened. So, you know, we see that a lot in every country.
Do you follow up with people? In other words, you do a group with these teenagers, and then do you find out what happens to them if some of them become really forces for positive change, or if they've changed psychologically?
The most that we see, the biggest changes that we can do is when we do the experiential classes, which is the class that you did, where you're actually in a scenario and you're seeing, what would I do in this scenario? Oh, I'm getting to witness my instincts. That might not be effective, my strategy that I've been doing. Why don't I try this new thing? And so we do get stories from anecdotes from teachers. What is most exciting for me is when we do a series of classes with Teen Court in Santa Fe, and one of the classes we did The Roots of Violence, then we did a class called What Would Provoke Me, that is what just it sounds like, of looking at what makes people angry and how they react and what the consequences might be of those actions. And we
even contemplating that question, what makes me mad, is quite fruitful. I remember doing that when I was in my 20s and mm-hmm. being surprised at what I wrote down.
Right, and it's really profound. And, you know, what's useful for the teenagers, especially at that age, is, you know, one of them, when we did that class, brought up her religious upbringing, and she wasn't really feeling in sync with what she and her family were doing. And what was really great is, you know, I got a chance to talk about, well, you can look at this a lot of ways. You can look at this around morals. You can look at this around belief systems and religion. And the way we're going to look at it today is just consequences. And look at, you know, teenagers can understand consequences really well. It's very immediate. And saying, okay, if you do this, your likelihood of going to jail is very high. If you do this, right, you may experience some social repercussions, but you're less likely to go to jail. You're less likely to get hurt. So helping them weigh those decisions. And then in the experiential 3-hour class where we enact these scenarios that they say, I've had trouble, I know that this has gotten me into trouble in the past, this is something that provokes me, they have the chance to experiment with, as I said, what they normally do. And we had these teenage boys who are saying these things that they know will get them in trouble, but they just can't help saying them.
Or like what?
One of them was, you know, just one of those, like, well, you're ugly, you know, you're stupid, these little ego, like, little things that, you know, if you ask them, it's like, well, what would you do if someone said that to you? Well, I'd hit them. Okay, well, and then you're going to say that he picked the fight with you, or he didn't pick the fight with you. You're the one that, you know, you could have walked away and you didn't. And we had one teenage girl in my last class who, it was very interesting for me. You know, they talk about bullying and how that's different with girls around social exclusion and that sort of thing rather than fists. And one of the things that she experienced is she wanted to have a character who was talking smack about her friend. And she had this person come up and he was saying, oh, your friend's a blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. And she was like, well, I'm not like that. No, maybe she was having a bad day. Well, just because I hang out with her doesn't mean I'm like that. And, you know, and it was one of those things where I just was watching it happening as her coach and then, you know, stopped it for a second and was like, what's going to happen when your friend finds out that you said this about her? You know, he's not saying this just recreationally. He's saying this because he wants to start trouble. And, you know, wouldn't a better response be to say, you know what, I don't want you saying that. She's my friend. Why are you saying that to me? You know I care about her. Don't talk to me like that.
Right.
And it was such a struggle for her to say that versus putting it off, again, with that the same system that we're talking about in the Roots of Violence class of putting it off onto someone else.
Right.
Saying, oh, you're ugly, you're weak, or, you know, she's not all that. You know, she thinks she is, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of just having the conversation, which, you know, we know, you know, from your class, it's so much harder to just set a boundary with someone sometimes than to delay it.
Was she able to do it?
She was. She was able to do it, and it was a huge revelation for her to think, like, oh, that's why, you know, because she was like, oh, you know, because oftentimes people think about girls being targeted by boys so much or by older men. You know, her biggest problem was girl-on-girl violence. And so for her, you know, it had just come out of nowhere, this girl-on-girl violence, instead of going, oh, maybe it's that I'm not addressing things the way I need to be, and it's escalating, and then once it gets back to me, there's nothing to do but to get into this physical confrontation, because I can't lie, you know, I can't, because that was another strategy she tried saying, is like, no, I didn't say that, and it was like, okay, well, what if you did? Because you've said you have. So it was a huge revelation for all of the students. One of the things that I loved best about this class is, you know, they're teen court kids. They're kids that are having trouble. And, you know, the first classes that we had, they had, like, their feet up on their chairs, and they were, you know, very clearly distancing themselves from the class. The last class of that series, after we'd done these role plays, I let them put the chairs however they want. We were sitting in the closest circle that everybody's knees were almost touching. And it was 5 or 6 people. So it was even close for me, actually. So it was just a really great testament. And, you know, the kids said, you know, one of my favorite and most troubled boys in that class said, you know, I'm glad we practiced that and not just talked about it, because this stuff comes up for me a lot. And usually I just fight. It was good to learn something else I could do.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
You're making me remember the 5th grade in which the most human cruelty I ever experienced in an ongoing way was with a 6th grader who just decided, because I was the new kid in the new school, to make my life miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, of course, in those days, no skills and no teaching and no awareness and no nothing. We just had nothing. And it was especially for, I mean, you're talking about kids who respond sometimes in violence and end up in teen court, but then there are people, many of us, who respond by shrinking like a little snail back
right.
into their shell
right.
and can't come out again for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's exciting. That population that you're describing is the population we've worked with for 10 years in Santa Fe. And, you know, we're still obviously very committed to those classes. That's what we do in our public classes quite a bit. And it's really exciting for me to work with both populations and say, look, there's no perfect way of doing this. These are, you know, if you go to one extreme or another, we're just looking for an effective response, which is frequently the middle ground.
Now, you have had some young people who have used their impact personal safety skills to really defend themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know, prevent kidnapping, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. We had an attempted kidnapping probably about a year or more plus ago, where the girl successfully defended herself. Well, she was, I believe, 8 years old at the time, which was very exciting. And we recently had 2 women in their 20s who, both while traveling, actually, one was on the beach with her friend, and her friend had a bag, and I think there were 5 of them. It was 2 women and 3 men. And actually, two men came up to try to get the bag. And unfortunately, you know, what we talk about in muggings and that sort of thing is just give up your possessions. It's not worth whatever struggle is there. And unfortunately, sometimes there is a physical aspect that comes into play even though somebody is willing to be cooperative. And so everyone's ran in different directions that was in that group. The woman, our graduate, and her friend were still there, and it was her friend's bag that they were trying to grab. And our graduate said that she was carrying her shoes in her hand, and she said she started hitting one of the guys with her shoes who had come to her, and the other guy was with her friend. And she said that she was hitting him with her shoe and then realized that she had more effective skills than that and yelled and realized that she was silent the whole time and suddenly yelled. And she said she could, in that split second, see that he was about to leave, that just yelling, he was about to run away. And he didn't run away fast enough, and he was still assaulting her, so she struck him in the eye with an eye strike. And she said it was, her adrenaline management was so good, it was like total slow motion, that she could analyze this whole process. And she actually noticed in that moment as he was leaving that he had a knife in his belt. And he was running, and his friend went with him. And what was interesting about that is oftentimes people say to our graduates who have experienced an assault or an attempted assault, well, aren't you afraid? And she was like, no, I sent him running.
Right.
Why would I be afraid? He's the one that clearly wasn't prepared for what happened. I was absolutely prepared. He went running away.
Alina Scheim is the executive director of Impact Personal Safety, which is on the web at impactpersonalsafety.org. We have to go because we've got one more quick segment coming up, but you can go to Impact Personal Safety and find out about all the programs and classes and ways that you can get involved on that website. What is the phone number?
It's 992-8833.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Sure.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.